Welcome to Dub Labs Louder Than the Noise, a series featuring dispatches from progressive music minds in the Middle East and North Africa.
Hello, Ziada. Good morning and great to have you here. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, thank you. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Yes, the pleasure is mine as well. I know of your long history in music. Seems like to me we're somewhat from contemporaries of the same generation or same kind of coming of age, you know. I was really looking forward to speak to someone that seems to have traveled the same road or a similar road.
Yeah. I started working at the local radio station, Radio Lebanon, in the early 90s, so 1993. And I played alternative music of all kinds on those radio shows 3, 4, 5 times a week. And around 96 or 1997, so 4 or 5 years into this, local artists would start giving me their demos to play on my radio programs. So this is 1996. We're talking about 1996 when this started. So I started working in the radio station here, the government radio, in 1993. And at the same time, playing music in bars and restaurants around town. So people would come to wherever I'm playing music and would know me from my radio shows. This is before the internet, so there's no streaming, there's no communicating with someone via Facebook or anything like that. In those early 90s days, people would listen to my radio shows here, and then I would bump into them in those bars or restaurants where I'd be playing music, and that's where the connection would be made. And eventually, when I started organizing small concerts in those bars and restaurants, That was the actual creation of a community, because some of the local bands that I was fond of would give me their demos to play on the radio show. I would play the demos, and eventually I was able to organize concerts for these people, for these friends of mine or artist friends of mine, and that's what eventually paved the way for the creation of a small community, you know, of like-minded musical people.
And from what you gather from those years and the demos, I'm very curious to get your take on what was the music like, what was the mindset of the musicians in Beirut making music during those days.
The young musicians who were coming up at that time were not doing anything that had to do with local Oriental music. They were very much inspired by Western sound. So Western sounds at the time in the mid 90s, trip hop was very much in fashion. So a couple of the bands that I played on my radio programs were inspired by Portishead, by Massive Attack. There was some hip hop being made. There was some hip hop being made, and the hip hop that was being made, even when it was sung in Arabic, was also inspired by Western hip-hop. The pop music that was made or the alternative rock that was made was mostly sung in English. And it wasn't really until much later that local alternative bands, you know, started going back to the Arabic language and to their Arabic roots. Back in those early days of Beirut's alternative music scene in the mid-90s, it was all pretty much inspired by the West. Even artists who did electronic music were very much inspired by Aphex Twin, by Boards of Canada, you know, productions from the Warp label and stuff like that. You have to bear in mind that the alternative scene here is very young. When we're talking about alternative rock or electronic music or even experimental music or improvised music, this is very much a young scene that started in the very late 90s, early 2000s. So it's kind of normal for them at the beginning to be inspired by Western counterparts and Western artists these are the things that they grew up listening to. And when they started making music, it was kind of normal for them to go towards that. And eventually they grew. These young people who were in their early 20s at the time grew, and their music grew with them. And so instead of being inspired by people from the West or being inspired even by people from the East, they started creating their own language that is a mixture of their Eastern roots and their Western influences. And that's when, for someone like me, who's very much someone who looks at it from the outside and, you know, releases and produces and promotes and documents and made a book about it, etc., it's very interesting to see these artists develop and go from making very habitual sounds to sounds that resemble nothing else, because they're coming from a no man's land. They're coming from an area that is completely new and original. In that sense, local artists did grow. And the growth, and this is where it becomes very interesting, the growth took place all over the different musical genres that were available here in Lebanon. So hip-hop grew in a certain manner. Folk grew in a certain manner. Alternative rock grew in a certain manner. Experimental music, and of course, electronic music. And it's interesting because you can trace that in the kind of instruments that they use. So, and the kind of machines they use.
And with that, would you say that also brought a certain growth to your own initiatives? For example, your record label, right? Rupture, who is a
right.
For those out there listening, it's a label that you started in 2006, correct?
2008, and we released the first record in 2009, but I had started organizing concerts in 2006.
I'm looking at the progression of the label and almost you yourself finding your voice. And that can be seen in the artwork itself. It's in 2012, for example, is the first front cover that you present with the characters, not just Western characters, but
in Arabic. Yeah, in Arabic. I think you're absolutely right. I had never looked at it in this manner, because when you're in the middle of it, it's difficult to have perspective and to look at it from the outside. But yes, I remember, for example, when I first started organizing concerts, you know, would design a few posters and hang them around town, and it was very lo-fi DIY. We'd rent equipment with our own money. Rent venues with our own money, etc. And over time, with the growth of the different small experimental scenes, alternative scenes, all of this changed. Not only did the music change, but the way you present the music changed as well. So the labels changed, and suddenly there wasn't any more one label. There were two and three and four labels. And a lot of them were doing very interesting things, not just Ruptured, but the more experimental and the more oriental labels were doing interesting things as well. And of course the music evolved, and the audiences also changed. So when you say that it's changing and it's evolving over time from the late 90s until today, the change is all across the board. So the venues change, the music changes, the artwork, the labels, the musicians themselves, the machines they're playing, everything suddenly becomes a little bit better. I know it's very subjective to say better. It's better with regard to what? It's better with regard to originality. Suddenly, you know, people are looking to do something new and to be more original and to create music that has not been heard somewhere else. Like, for example, this album that's Al Ras and Munma is the first album that was made in this area of the world with electronic beats and hip hop. And very heavy, dark electronic beats. It had been done in the West before, but for Lebanon, for example, it was a first.
Do you think, in some regards, there was this type of progression, this type of advance, or this type of attitude towards music making across the region? Because I know that you've taken initiatives through the I'm not sure how to pronounce it.
It's Irtijal.
Irtijal. through that initiative, it shows an approach at not just serving the local community in Beirut, but also you're looking at kind of connecting the region in some way. I don't know if that's accurate.
It is accurate. Just to put things in perspective, the word irtijal means improvisation in Arabic. So when you're doing irtijal, you're improvising. So they named their festival after the music that they were playing because they were Lebanese free improv musicians who had studied abroad, and they came to Lebanon and they wanted to do a festival that would gather them and the people they liked abroad. So from the get-go, from the initial years of the festival, it always had the intention of bringing people from outside Lebanon and having them collaborate with local musicians. So the intent was always to create a bridge between Lebanon and the outside world, not only the Arab world, but also Europe and the USA and the Far East, etc. So they created this festival in 2000. I eventually joined it maybe 10 years later. But for the first 10 years of its existence, the festival grew from being a one-day festival, a two-day festival, a three-day festival, etc. And from having 5 or 6 or 7 musicians to having 10 and 15 and 20, and some editions we have like around 50 people here. It's a festival that grew over time, and it grew with the scene, and it grew with the experimental scene. At some point, it had enough power and it had enough mantle to invite musicians from the area. So one year there was a special Egyptian edition where we invited all of the very notable and notorious Egyptian electronic practitioners. So that was 3 or 4 years ago. There was a Swiss edition where we invited Swiss musicians, a German edition where we asked some Lebanese people in Germany to invite their friends from Germany to play in Lebanon. So it's an experimental festival. So sometimes you're listening to music that is completely unlistenable. It's free improv. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's really bad. I mean, I've seen some really bad concerts over the years in that festival and some really good ones. But the way that it's grown to incorporate other types of music over time, like free rock and alternative rock and electronica and folk music, and while at the same time retaining its initial experimental identity. So you're free to do any type of music you want within that festival when you're invited, but it still needs to retain that edge. And because it's open to the Arab world, and because some classical Arabic musicians played in it over time, it's become a very important pole and a very important focus of attraction for a lot of people who are involved in experimental music around the world. For example, I'm just giving you an example of something that's been happening a lot recently, of people wanting to attend that festival because it creates a very nice musical bridge between this country, the countries around it, Europe, some parts of the USA, and across different musical genres while retaining this very experimental spirit.
There's a side of this that you have to address, right? And the region being filled with conflict or tensions among countries, among communities in those countries. Do you see a festival like this or generally the music being a unifying factor?
In a sense, yeah. In a sense, the cliché is very true. And, you know, like most clichés, they're based in reality. And this cliché of music uniting people is very true in the case of irtijal. In the manner that it's managed to gather people who don't necessarily like each other or communicate with each other or, you know, are fond of each other's musics. But it's managed to bring them together at different times over its 20-year existence. It's managed to do that, yes. Yeah.
getting a sense of your style and when you do things like this, it's not like your goal is like, yes, I want to unify people, because, you know, usually it doesn't work that way.
No, of course not.
It's a byproduct. It strikes me as, you know, you're a music head like you know, many of us here. And this is just like a nice thing that happens to happen.
It was exactly what you said, a byproduct, you know. So when they started the festival in 2000, all they wanted was a space and a place for them to play music with the other musicians whom they like and whom they're friends with. And eventually this grew exponentially to include many more musicians and many more types of music. And yes, this coming together of different peoples happened as a byproduct, as an unexpected positive result.
Have there been cases of the opposite, where people from different nationalities being in one space, being part of one festival, stroke some tensions among some of the artists or attendees?
In my time there were never actual clashes of that sort. The bad experiences we've had were bad experiences that had to do with, for example, music. We paired a couple of musicians together, or we created a trio or a quartet that did not work, and that played a concert that was not good, and people did not enjoy it, and we were criticized for it, etc. So there were experiences like that. We've had difficulties with the authorities, with, for example, instruments being confiscated and having to go to the authorities and trying to get the instruments out in time. We've had musicians canceling at the last possible minute and putting us in a pickle. But actual clashes between musicians during the festival, honestly, in my experience, that's not happened.
And not just the festival, but through your work, through your radio program, through your record label, through all the work you do, have you ever faced any backlash or any sort of like interaction with government forces in terms of censorship or concern for the content you're producing?
I faced issues with the authorities for organizing concerts without getting the necessary approvals from the authorities for artist visas. So this has happened a few times. As far as censorship goes, no, I was never, I never had problems, because I maintain a very strict control over what I release. So I'm very careful with what is being said on my records or what is being shown in the artwork. I avoid all sorts of religious connotations, all sorts of nudity. You know, all this is forbidden here. So religious connotations, nudity, political speech, etc. All of that I avoid. I've had to avoid in the records. Also, there's something you have to bear in mind, because this is something that I discussed with my lawyer once. Since we operate on a small scale, I mean, my label produces runs of 300 to 500 CDs or vinyls. 300 to 500 is really very small. The concerts that I organize, or that Irtijal organizes, are attended by, you know, 50 to 400 people max. So the scale is so small that the government really doesn't care, and the censorship bureau doesn't care. It's when it's a much larger scale that they care. For example, this club, you know, Lebanon has a very strong clubbing culture. There's four or five clubs, and they're famous worldwide, and people come from all over the country to go to these two or three clubs. One of these clubs had a big DJ. Can't remember who the DJ was. Someone either British or French or whatever. And this DJ played in his set part of the call to prayer. Okay, just a very small segment of the call to prayer. The call to prayer that the Muaddin sings at the mosque here five times a day. And the club was immediately shut down.
Whoa.
You know, someone took a video of that very small segment of a call to prayer being played in a DJ set. the video went up on YouTube and the club was shut down. And the owners of the club had to go to the general security and had to, you know, pay all sorts of fines and penalties in order to reopen their club. Because this is happening on a much larger scale. When it happens on, you know, clubs are attended by thousands of people. We're talking about a minimum of 500 to a maximum of 3,000 people will attend a DJ set by Richie Houghton or by Sven Veith or whatever. So because the scale is much, much larger and much, much bigger, the government pays attention to these. But us, you know, we're small fish. Exactly. So we can get away with a lot of, yeah, we can get away with a lot of shit, which is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, you fly under the radar.
We fly under the radar. Even if it's the oldest experimental festival in the whole area, not only in Lebanon, it's the oldest experimental festival in the area, we still fly under the radar because our nights are attended by 200 to 250 people max.
Where do you see things heading, not only through your work, but also through the works of others in your community, through Rupture, through the work you do at festivals? What do you think is next?
I know, for example, that Lebanese artists are very frustrated and want to be able to play concerts abroad. And very, very few Lebanese bands and artists are able to play abroad. A lot of them are constricted to this area. So because this frustration is growing, I see more and more demand for, you know, bookers and concert managers and managers of bands. And I see the music going more in that direction of bands wanting to play abroad and of bands being able to project their music outside of the confines of Lebanon. So what I think is going to happen is more and more musicians are going to leave. And this has already started to happen. The Irtijal Festival, for example, was created by three guys and two of them have already left Lebanon to settle in Berlin. So you have this drain, this music drain that has been happening very steadily and a lot of musicians are leaving, which is kind of alarming and kind of sad on the one hand. But on the other hand, when a festival like Irtijal or a festival like Beirut and Beyond happens, you see a lot of these people who left coming back to play here. What I think is going to happen is more of this, is more and more musicians leaving because they're finding Lebanon very frustrating to be a musician in. You know, you can't really make a living, you can't really survive or live off your music. I see also, on a very different scale and on a very different level, there's been also with musicians a very high demand for education, for workshops. So we get asked more and more to organize workshops, to bring people from abroad who build instruments or who teach you how to use certain instruments. So with a Swedish studio, we brought a couple of Swedish instrument builders here. And when we did that, a lot of Lebanese musicians joined and a lot of Egyptian musicians joined. And we get asked more and more for that. So, for example, in the next edition of Irtijal, we're trying to organize a series of workshops. This French musician was here last month, Jean-Marc Montera. My partner in Irtijal, Sharif Sahnawi, organized a workshop with him where he taught local musicians, five or six of them, techniques of improvised guitar playing and what to do with your pedals and how to use that whole pedal board in an experimental context. And what's interesting is that the musicians who joined were not only very young starting musicians, you know, very young debuting musicians. No, a lot of them were older practitioners who had been around for a while and who just wanted to learn something new. So there's a lot of demand for that also for, you know, please get us people here to teach us workshops, to build new instruments, to teach us about analog synthesizers, etc. And that wasn't the case before. This is a very recent development, like a year.
You mentioned when you when you started, which is when I started too, I do remember those days where with no internet, you know, and it was all more kind of like random and you know, it was just a different way of doing things. And so you have an appreciation of the before and after. Do you think with the development of the internet, could you say the internet has been a factor in unifying the different voices of the region?
I'm not sure about unifying, but the internet did play an immense role in this region, in the sense that it allowed people to express themselves and to make their music heard, because it's very tough here to make your music heard.
Maybe that was a question, more empowering. Yeah, if it serves as a tool for empowerment for the artist.
Definitely, because you know, local radio stations don't really care for alternative music, apart from my radio show, maybe, and a couple of others. Actually, no, just my radio show for local music.
That's great.
So there's really no way for local music makers, alternative local music makers, to have their music heard. And the internet blew all that apart and let everyone make their music available to everyone. And in that sense, it was an incredible tool of empowerment and an incredible way to project yourself out there, not only with the music, but also with the images and, you know, Instagram and Facebook. And, you know, you can build a whole identity for yourself and your music thanks to these social platforms today. It's a bit mind-boggling and a bit freaky, but, I mean, this is the way the world is going. And in Lebanon, because there's so much repression going on the social level, on the political level, on many different levels, because there's so much repression and because people are so frustrated, the internet had, you know, a double effect. It was even more important and even more relied on to express your identity.
That's great. I really enjoy getting your insight, and I think I could honestly sit with you for another 4 hours and you know, talk, and then even rant about things, which I love doing.
Anytime.